Accession number 29070, reel number 1.
Flight Lieutenant Johnson, reel 1. Can you tell me if there was a tradition of military service in your background?
Yes. My father was in the Royal Horse Artillery. He ended up being a major, actually. But he died, actually, 3 months after I joined up, at about 58 years of age, from the effects of the war, of the First World War. He was gassed, and his lungs gave out. Promised he would shoot me if I joined up.
Why did you do that?
He didn't want me to go to war again more. He didn't like it. and he was quite serious, but he was very ill. I was recalled from... I was waiting for a course at outside Edinburgh, Kirk Newton, and I was recalled from there when he died. And they gave me extra leave for that.
Was he a regular soldier, or...?
Oh, yes. Yes, he was a regular soldier. I think that he also had brothers as well.
Was he in the army when you were growing up?
Pardon?
Was he still in the army when you were growing up?
No. Oh, no. He'd been invalided out in 1922, I think it was. He was bailiff to the Earl of Industries estate in Staffordshire. I was born there in the house in the place called Great Haywood. And he was bailiff there. In those days, of course, we lived very well because we were on an estate. Other than that, he was a very reserved man. He didn't have an awful lot. His interests were horses, really. And the estate had carriages and horses, which he drove around as well.
Can you remember what you thought when he said, don't join up? What was your own feeling about that?
Well, I wanted to join the Air Force anyway. I'll tell you a little story was that by that time, the Earl of Industry had died and he had no... my father had a post office and shop in the village of Little Haywood. It was Great Haywood, Little Haywood. And I wrote to the Air Force. I got a form, sent it into the Air Force when I was about 16. Yes. But silly, I posted it in our own post office. And Dad got it. He saw to the mail in the morning and gave me a right old ticking off and a smack round the ear for trying to join up. So I couldn't join up. And I'd given my notice in. I'd lost my job, actually.
What was your job?
I was going to assist at that time in the English Electric big engineering. I was in the drilling section there. But later on, I left there and went to a place called Universal Grinding Wheel Company as assistant to the chemists. There were three chemists there. And later on, I was actually training to be a chemist.
When was it that you first got this idea of wanting to join the Air Force? Roughly how old were you?
I think just whilst I was at school, I think. Why, I don't know. I say why, I don't know. I'll just divert slightly. Is that I had a cousin who also became an Air Commodore by here, a fellow named Bert Johnson. And he took me to London to the wireless exhibition, and I met...
Logie Baird.
No. Fellow invented television.
Yeah, Logie Baird.
Baird, sorry. And we talked there, and I was with my cousin, and I think he influenced me, really. In fact, I have a feeling at the back of it all through my wartime, he was looking after me. Once or twice, he's appeared on the scene, and I have a feeling he had some influence. A bit later on, I might tell you, but I was at Mamby later on for a gunnery instructor's course, and we were all very naughty, and the course was closed, and the Canadians and ourselves were sent home. And I thought I was going to be in trouble, but he was head at Heslington Hall of 4 Group. And he knew about it, and I think he got me off.
So he was your godfather?
Yes, yes.
And when you were at school, did you do any military training there?
No.
Paramilitary training?
There was nothing then, no. It was just influenced probably from my father. He didn't say a lot, but there were quite a lot of photographs and things about. And I know he was... he won a medal or two.
Did he talk about the war and what he'd done?
Not a lot. Not a lot. But he got... No. There's nothing really I could relate that I know of any great influence.
When you were growing up, this is the 1920s, the 1930s, things were happening in Europe and beyond. Do you remember if there was a time... I was asking if when you were growing up, you decided at one point or another that a war was a likelihood or a certainty?
No, I didn't realise that, no. I presume it because I didn't get interested in it. I was very involved with sport. At my time, I used to play 2 games of football on a Saturday and a game of hockey. So that was the sort of thing. And in the week, I used to swim a lot. I used to swim in the summer about a mile in the canals every morning and that sort of thing. So I was a fanatic as far as fitness and sport was concerned. So I didn't listen too much at home. I'm nearly always out. Sorry, but I couldn't tell you much about it.
Would you say then that when war did begin, it was a surprise to you?
It was, yes. Yes, it. You know, I started to think a bit then. I had a very great friend. He went off. They didn't release us from our work at Universal Grinding Mill Company. It was a reserved occupation. And we couldn't go until, I think it was 1939, at the end of 1939, they sent an order out that if you could get in the Air Force, you could be released from there. Well, I got released for 1940. My friend had to wait a bit longer, but he went into the army, in the tanks, actually. I haven't met him since. Anyway, yes, it was a surprise, and of course, I think you generated enthusiasm to go because of your age. What really also, I was on Stafford Railway Station when the fellas were coming back from Dunkirk. And the army boys, if they saw an Air Force boy, they beat him up because they said they didn't defend them. I'm sure you know about that. And so I thought, I'll bust it. If I'm going anywhere, it's the Air Force. I think they finalised it for me.
When you started to think about it after the outbreak of war, do you remember if you had any ideas about the way the war might be conducted?
No. No, I never get myself involved. No, I didn't. I'm not intelligent enough for that, to think like that. No, I was just concerned in getting in there, attempting to be a pilot. When I got to Cardington, they didn't want pilots anyway. Not really.
When you'd been interested in joining the Air Force earlier on as a boy, was it the flying that was the attraction?
Oh, yes.
The idea?
Yes, definitely. I mentioned my cousin, who was a boy cadet, by the way, and his brother became a test pilot for Handley Page. So they were both involved. They were both born on the outskirts of Croydon, and they used to always be down there.
At the aerodrome.
At the aerodrome.
When you did manage to join, this was in 1941, you were called up. What did that involve doing, the process of joining up? What did you have to do to enter the Air Force?
This is the beginning of the end, yes. I joined up at Cardington. It was damn cold, it was winter, it was snow everywhere, slept on hard beds, and ate food you'd never heard of. We then sent to Morecambe, which we did our square bashing. There was ice on the roads, and we used to fall all over the place. Rather an experience. The women in Morecambe used to beat poor old Sergeant Buller, who had us marching through the town, and don't shout at those boys. Of course, we used to love it. And then from there, I went to a place called Evington. Not Evington, sorry, Dingwall. Beg your pardon, Dingwall.
That's in Scotland, isn't it?
That's in Scotland.
Now, when you were in the first stage at Cardington, what were they doing with you there?
They didn't do... Well, we just had a medical, a very thorough medical right through. I think we were there 2 days. Now, after 2 days, we were pushed up to... They were getting us out as quickly as they could.
So, processing through.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And at Morecambe, what was the syllabus of training there? You mentioned the drill. What else did you do at Morecambe?
No, nothing else. Just the drill. With no armaments, with no uniforms. We were still in civilian clothes. And there was no rifles or anything like that. So we didn't do any rifle drill, you might say.
How long did that last, that foot drill?
If I remember now, we were there 10 days. I think it was 10 days we were there. I'm not absolutely certain now.
Why do you think they were giving you drill? What was the reason for that?
Well, just... Well, the drill is used to make you understand and obey what they're saying. We had a very good warrant officer. In fact, he was the marker for the Queen's, or the King's, it was then, parades. He was brilliant at his orders and everything, yes. But I think it's just to train us to understand and obey.
How did you take to the discipline?
Pardon?
How did you take to the discipline? Was it something that came to you easily? Or
Yes. I wasn't... that was pure and simply because my father was. I'm sure of that. Mm-hmm. He used to... if he went out for a walk with my father and I walked on the curb of the bus like kids do, I used to get walloped for it. And he used to find out if I told lies, and I used to get walloped for it then as well. But no, it was, yes. His army discipline.
What about the other chaps you joined with? Did they adapt to discipline, or were there any who found it difficult?
Well, I think straight away, having been pushed together into houses in Morecambe, the esprit de corps between us was good. I always remember this fellow said, anybody playing billiards? And we were bored at night, if you like to say bored. And I said, well, I do a bit, because I used to play for the village team, actually. Oh, we'll go down to the room in Morecambe. And he said, oh, well, you break off. I broke off, and I never saw the table again. He sort of did 100 break, and I said, oh, just a minute. Well, he said, I was the junior champion of England. Very nice chap, and I made great friends with him. And when we got up to Dingwall, I even played in the summer up there, tennis with him at 12 o'clock at night for the Aurora Borealis lights. Very good. Yes, got on with Bernard very nicely. Bernard Russell, his name was.
Where did the chaps come from? Were they from all over the country?
All over the country. All over the country. I can't remember things.
I was asking about the other men on this in the squad, if they were from
yes,
all over the country.
No, they came from... There were Scotsmen, there were Irishmen, there were, of course, English, Welsh. I think there was something like 150 of us at Morecambe. And then we all went to Dingwall, saw my first sign of war there, by the way.
What was that?
We were picking up paper and manning the gun emplacements and taught to fire small cannon. A Dornier came over and bombed Inverness, came back and came down to land on the aerodrome at Dingwall with a white flag. We were aghast at this thing coming down, but halfway down the runway he opened up and went off. Okay.
So it was a false surrender.
Pardon?
It was a false surrender.
Yes, we surmised that they'd had an argument. The pilot and the navigator, whatever, and the gunner, on why they should land, give themselves up. Anyway, they flew off, and about 3 or 4 hours later, a Frenchman in a not a Spitfire, the other one, Hurricane, came and did a victory roll and then landed. And he'd shot him down on the coast on the way out. So he's had a happy time. That was the end of that fella.
What did they do with you at Dingwall? What was the training you did there?
Oh, we didn't do any training, really. Yes, as I say, we were picking up paper, cleaning toilets, and manning the guns. We were taught to Bofors guns, small light ACAC.
Was this the 40mm Bofors?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they were. I'm just...
What was your post on the Bofors then? What was your role?
In that?
Yes.
Well, as we've been taught, there were... three of us, three to a gun pit, and one was for passing up any ammunition, and the other two were to fire the guns. We were just taught, that's all, really, to how to fire the guns.
How long did it take you to learn how to fire the Bofors?
Oh, probably an hour, something like that.
Did you do any live firing as part of that training?
No, we didn't, no. I didn't fire a gun until I got to gunnery school, which was just further down the coast, by the way. At a place called Everton, the gunnery school.
What were the living conditions like at Dingwall?
Oh, Dingwall was all right, yes, very good. Very nice. Had a beautiful summer there, about 3 months of it. Yeah. The WAFs got into trouble because they kept on sleeping out with just the bras and knickers on. On the rooftops of the huts. Hey?
Sorry.
What happened then when you got to Everton, to the gunnery school?
What?
What happened at Everton? What did you learn there?
Oh, well, we're in defiance. We had two ex-Battle Britain pilots, an American and a Pole, not a yes, a pole. I got the pole the first morning and we took off and he turned me upside down through Everton, through the village, and I was violently sick in the turret, everything going around my head. I always remember. And then we got out over the sea, there's a Lysander was...
You were over the sea in the Lysander.
And the Lysander came up with the drogue. And all this polka said, "You fire! You fire!" And I'm being sick. Anyway, we fired. I don't know whether it hit the drogue. I never saw the results of my... Which was always annoying to me. Of what I did. You know, they didn't... They just said, well, you passed, and that's it. Well, they never gave us anything in writing, if you might say, at all. So they just wanted us to get on with the job.
What sort of aircraft were you flying in?
We were flying Bolton Paul.
Oh, you were in
Defiance.
Defiance.
So we got a turret, you see.
Well,
and that's very good aircraft. There was a very, very nasty thing happened. The boy who was top of the class, we were waiting to go down to the local pub to have a drink because we'd finished this course. But he'd got a quarter of an hour's flying to do. Now, the American boy took him up. I took him up to about 10,000 feet. And the engines cut. They had to get out. The pilot got out and parachuted down. The boy, I can't think of his name. Anyway, he got out, but we'd been told, when you put the parachute on your chest, you clip it on the front, don't look down when you pull the cord, because it might come up and hit you and break your neck. And this lad put his parachute on the long way round, left-handed, instead of right. And he never looked down, and he died. He hit the ground and was killed. And when they picked him up, he'd actually lost all the top of his fingers and gone through the canvas of the pack. This is only seconds.
Yes.
Coming down from about 10,000 feet or a little less. But he clawed at it to find, and all he got to do was to look down, it was on the other side. Mm-hmm. And he didn't, because we were told never to look down. Mm-hmm. And it killed him. And he was a lovely chap, too. So we didn't go to the pub, and we were very, all went back to the mess, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. How did they actually train you to use the guns? Did they start on the ground? Was there any theory?
Oh, yes, we went down to the firing range and used the guns down there to begin with, yes. Twin 303. What's the name of the gun? What was that?
Were they Brownings? Or
that's right.
Brownings.
Yes. And we had those, of course, in the turret. As I say, I don't think many of us really got to know what we really did. At that time, you'll appreciate, I think, you have to appreciate that when I joined up, they were wanting gunners as much as anything. I'll prove that a little bit later on. And consequently, I think everything was really pushed and rushed, although we waited quite a long time before we got our course. But that was due to the fact there were so many people in front of us going through the courses. And so we waited a long time.
How long did the course last?
Let me think. I would say a fortnight. I think it was 2 weeks.
What was the Browning like as a weapon? What did you think of it when you were introduced to it and started using it?
You'll have to appreciate that very few of us ever had fired a machine gun. And so the comparison with anything else is very difficult. It seemed to be smooth. It was, wasn't 800... I think it was 400 rounds a minute. I'm not sure about that. I was stunned. I think it was that. Yeah. And, you know, you press the triggers and you got the aiming right, I hope. We were taught, by the way, of cross trajectory of an aircraft coming across you, to follow it, how much to fire in front of it, if you could estimate the rate or its speed, and then he gave you feet and inches, if you like, in front, or whatever. That sort of thing was taught to us, yes.
So this is deflection?
Yes.
Hmm. When you were firing the machine guns on the ground, on the range, what sort of distances were you shooting at, and what sort of targets did you have there?
Oh, we had only just ordinary targets, round targets there,
right.
That's all. They didn't put us any milk bottles up or anything like that.
And over what distance were you shooting?
I think it was 300 yards, if I remember right. I might be, you know, it's a long time ago, is this? Somewhere around about 300 yards, I would say.
And when you were in the air, what sort of range were you supposed to open fire at?
Well,
a drogue or at a target?
There
again, it's all according to how you had
yourself adjusted the range you could choose what you wanted to do, really. I used to have it about 250 to 300.
What the sights set?
Yes.
Yes.
It's off your sight you gazed it, yes.
Right.
You set your gaze at an angle or the to fire. So that, well, I thought it was a fair defence. I was in Wellington's post to begin with in the front, which was a little more difficult, to be very honest, to set up just the two guns. Because you've got to visualise that you're going to probably fire with an aircraft going across you, not so much straight at you. So it was a little more difficult to appreciate or adjust to this speed across.
What was supposed to be the maximum range for the Browning?
450, I think it was. Yes, 450. It's nothing like the American things. The American 5.5s, up to 4 miles they were. 4.1 miles out of a Liberator. The Browning was nothing like that at all. To be effective, that's what I'm trying to say, is to get your concentration of effective. Then again, it's all according to how you set the angles for what you wanted to fire. I said 400. I think that was the full grouping of four machine guns, raised up and put on a bit, up to 800. I mean, you could be effective at about 800. You could knock an aircraft down with it, yes. Particularly with four.
Less so with two.
It's better than two, of course. You'll get a more concentrated lot of bullets going through you.
Were you supposed to fire in short bursts or in long bursts? What was the thing about that?
That's another thing. Is entirely up to your own judgment. If you felt that a 3 second burst giving about 80 shells was enough, you would see whether your aircraft was attacking you, goes on fire, or you've killed the pilot, or anything like that. Well, you just save your ammunition, because we hadn't a tremendous amount of ammunition. I'm just trying to think how much we did carry. About 2,000 rounds, I think, was in the drums.
Was it all in drums, or did you have it?
No,
in
we've got. I said drums. It's it fed from canisters.
Yes.
Up the side, either side of you.
Were you supposed to aim for the cockpit or for any other particular part of an enemy aircraft that was a target? If you had an enemy aircraft closing on you or about to pass, what was the best point to aim for?
Well, you just aimed at him, but. I would say the cockpit. If you could kill the pilot, it's you know, you're finished. The Germans, by the way, always fire between the engines. Their aim was to they knew if they came at you head first with a four engine aircraft, if they fired in between them, they kill the pilot. You're up there in between your engines and as on a mid upper turret, it comes straight through on the top and blow your head off if you got it in the wrong way, or got in way of it. But we're there again at night, and an aircraft coming, quite honestly, to pick it up first and foremost was always a plus. If you got him quickly, And you opened up on him, and if he happens to, if he happens to be the turret, the pilot side of him, good luck. Yeah, but we used to rake it end to end. I didn't shoot many down, you know, although I was there a lot. I fired the guns very.